Chief Judge Erdman, judges of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Catherine DePaul. Together with Captain Ryan Yoder, we represent the appellant, Specialist Christopher Hukill. Here, the military judge eroded appellant's presumption of innocence by finding he had a propensity to commit the charged offenses before they'd been proven beyond a reasonable doubt in violation of Hills. Three appellate exhibits illustrate this error. First, the military judge's ruling, in which he determined that MRE 413 applied to charged conduct, and that the 403 balancing test and right factors provided adequate constitutional safeguards, two findings that directly contradict Hills. Second, the government's motion, which the judge granted, seeking to apply propensity evidence in the same manner Hills found erroneous. And third, the defense's motion, in which they argued that MRE 413 did not apply to charged conduct and that doing so would erode appellant's presumption of innocence, arguments this court relied on in Hills, but here the military judge rejected. Finally, this error prejudiced the appellant. The government's case was not strong. Additionally, the military judge determined that the propensity evidence in this case had a, quote, high probative value. Capitalizing on this, the trial counsel argued improper propensity evidence during closing. For these reasons, the government cannot prove that the erroneous application of propensity evidence in this case was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Turning first to the military judge's ruling, citing the, quote, plain language of MRE 413, the military judge here found that MRE 413 applied to charged conduct. Contrast with Hills, where this court said neither the structure of MRE 413 and its relationship to MRE 404 Bravo nor the legislative history of the federal rule upon which it is based suggests that MRE 413 and its attendant instructions may be applied to evidence of charged misconduct.
In fairness to the military judge, you agree that he or she did not have the benefit of our decision in Hills, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So your argument is that you still get the benefit of Hills even though they didn't have it because you're on direct appeal.
Your Honor, under either scenario, the defense wins. If this court finds that Hills did not, in fact, change the law, that Hills has always been the law, then the military judge is presumed to know the law, absent evidence to the contrary. And here there is evidence to the contrary. The military judge did not follow Hills. That is the military judge's ruling, the government's motion, and the defense's motion. If, however, this court finds the military judge is presumed to know and follow DaCosta and the military judge's bench push instruction that was applicable at the time of the appellant's court-martial, then those documents provided the same mechanism for applying propensity evidence that this court found was erroneous in Hills. And we would just move to a discussion about prejudice.
Well, isn't this awfully complicated? The rule is if it's still on direct appeal, you get the benefit. Why do we need to get into the metaphysics of whether you uncover it, whether you uncover the law or make the law? What difference does it make?
Correct, Your Honor. And again,
I think that we took Hills and decided Hills because of what the Air Force and the Army were doing with 413, right? And we said you can't do it.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I think Judge Stupi is correct. You're making this unnecessarily complicated for yourself.
Yes, Your Honor. Now, we know that the military judge here did not follow Hills. After erroneously finding that MRE 413 applies to charge misconduct, the military judge concluded, this court finds no constitutional violation using charged offenses that have been properly evaluated using the definitions set forth in MRE 413 and the factors set forth in Wright. Here, that rationale was expressly rejected in Hills. Wright allows for an inference of propensity once the misconduct has been proven by a preponderance of the evidence, a standard the military judge quoted multiple times in his ruling. Specifically, the military judge found the court finds by a preponderance of the evidence that both alleged sexual assaults occurred. He also made a conclusion of law stating that the accused had a propensity to sexually assault females, and he found that by a preponderance of the evidence. Applying 403 and Wright, the military judge concluded the probative weight of the evidence is, quote, high, demonstrating the accused's propensity to sexually assault two females that he knew prior to the alleged sexual assaults.
Can you just discuss for us, I mean, let's say that we agree with you that Hills applies, to consider evidence of uncharged misconduct to prove other uncharged misconduct, right? And that we'll assume that he did that, right? But there was two parts to Hills, right? There was the constitutional error, And then there was a prejudice analysis. So could you talk to us about why there's prejudice in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The government benefited from this constitutional error, and it's their burden to prove that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And as this court stated in Hills, an error is not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt when there's a reasonable probability the error might have contributed to the verdict. And the government cannot meet the burden in this case. The government introduced this error into the trial. They believe that their case was stronger with 413 evidence than without it. And the military judge's ruling shows he erroneously admitted the evidence and believed it could be used in the same manner this court found erroneous in Hills. And further, perhaps most significantly, showing that this error contributed to the findings, the military judge in his ruling in performing the right factors said specifically, the probative weight of the evidence is high, demonstrating the accused's propensity to sexually assault two females that he knew prior to the alleged sexual assault. And that's a direct quote from the military judge's ruling. So the military judge, the fact finder, said in black and white that the probative value of propensity evidence in this case was high.
Captain DePaul, that might be the case, but isn't the real concern, or wasn't one of the concerns in Hills, is that the use of this evidence in this way might relieve the burden, the government's burden to prove the offenses beyond a reasonable doubt? Wasn't that one of the major concerns?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, if the judge is presumed to know the law, absent indications to the contrary, wouldn't the judge know that he cannot use the evidence in a way that relieves the government of its burden?
Your Honor, as you stated, absent evidence to the contrary, but there is evidence to the contrary in this case. The military judge in his ruling tells this court that he is doing the exact same procedure that this court found erroneous in Hills, and there's no reason to believe that once he became the fact finder, that his analysis changed one bit. In fact, the government's motion, it wasn't contingent upon Specialist Hukla electing trial by members, and the military judge did not admit it contingent upon him electing trial by members. And so the military judge's ruling, again, shows that he believes that once the propensity evidence had been proven by a preponderance, that that could then be used to prove the charged offenses before they've been proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
And that's your indication that he was inadvertently, if nothing else, relieving the government of its burden?
Yes, Your Honor. And as this court noted in Hills, the juxtaposition of the preponderance of the evidence standard with the proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard with respect to the elements of the same offenses would tax the brain of even a trained lawyer.
The distinction, right, in this case, I think, is that part of the concern, I think, that we had in terms of prejudice in that context was that the instructions that were given were confusing, to say the least, and that we could not be the least bit certain that the members could put things in the different categories and reach a decision based on a proper legal standard. Does that make sense? And would you agree this is at least on its face somewhat different, right? Because that's exactly what a military judge would think would be able to do, even if he was wrong to use it the way that he did at all, okay? And that's why I said there's two different issues, right, which is you shouldn't use evidence of uncharged misconduct to prove other uncharged misconduct, but that's the error, right? So you have the error, but then you have, you know, the issue of, like, but do we think that there's a problem? So if your answer to that is, well, the government hasn't shown that there wasn't a problem, that's one answer, and that's fair. But this ruling was made in the context of, this is going to be a member's trial, and I'm going to give them a limiting instruction and make sure that they understand that the evidence, introduction of such evidence does not relieve the government of its burden of proving every element of every offense charged, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it seemed like he did understand that.
Your Honor, the problem in Hills that certainly was the instructions, but it's not only the instructions. It's the inference of propensity before the offense had been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And here,
but that was the error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, I mean, that's what we said was the constitutional error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? But then the instructions were what led us to find that there was a problem that required reversal, right? I mean, I thought that that's what we did. I thought that there was two parts to the opinion.
Correct, Your Honor. But there's nothing in the military judge's ruling to suggest that he appreciates that problem and that when he himself becomes the fact finder, that he wouldn't apply propensity in the exact same way that he was going to instruct the panel members. And again, as this court noted, applying the preponderance standard to the same evidence that you have to apply the beyond a reasonable doubt standard would tax the brain of even a trained lawyer. And here, again, the military judge found that the probative value of the propensity evidence in this case was, quote, high. And that, in and of itself, is strong indication that it contributed to his findings. Further, showing the prejudicial impact of this error, the trial counsel argued propensity evidence to the fact finder. Specifically, during closing argument, the government counsel said, Your Honor, the accused has committed two incidents of sexual assault, two very similar incidents. They are strong in their own right, but they're even stronger when you consider MRE 413. And the government's case was not strong. There are no eyewitness accounts of the alleged offenses. There's no DNA evidence.
Counsel, let me ask you one other thing. In a judge-alone trial or a bench trial, does it really matter what the counsel is arguing to the judge? Doesn't the judge have his own obligation to look through the law, understand it, and come to his findings?
Your Honor, it does matter because it shows us that propensity was very much alive and well in Specialist Who Kills Court-Martial, that the propensity evidence was admitted, and that it was used. And if the military judge was not going to consider propensity evidence, we'd expect the military judge to perhaps stop the trial counsel during argument or perhaps after findings note on the record that he did not consider propensity evidence. And we don't have that in this case. And so the fact that it was admitted to the court-martial and argued shows that it did contribute to the military judge's findings.
Let me ask you another question. Is the problem here when there is a military judge sitting alone, is it a crossover problem? Is the problem from your perspective that the military judge is not allowing the offenses to stand alone in deciding each one? Is that the problem?
That's part of the problem, Your Honor.
Because if that's the problem, doesn't the military judge know that he must decide the offenses as they stand on their own right?
Your Honor, absent evidence to the contrary, and here the military judge is showing us in his ruling that he believes once propensity has been proven by preponderance of the evidence, before the offense has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, it can be used to show the accused propensity to commit the charged offenses. And that very mechanism is what this court found erroneous in Hills, and that very mechanism is what the...
Well, you're saying that because he was wrong and the appellant here gets the benefit, therefore he was wrong, per se, and therefore there's prejudice. Prejudice analysis requires more than that.
Your Honor, it's not simply that there was error. Again, the military judge...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
It's not simply that there was error, Your Honor, that leads to prejudice. Here, we know it prejudiced Specialist Hukil because, again, the military judge said in black and white in his ruling that the probative value of propensity evidence in this case was, quote, high. And so there's no reason to expect that when he deliberated that he considered that propensity evidence.
That high probative value on the one hand, and on the other hand saying, and therefore, I will convict him of offense A, not because they've proven every element of offense A beyond a reasonable doubt, but because I think he probably did offense B.
Your Honor, there certainly is a difference. However, in this case, because there is error, and we know there's error from the military judge's ruling, it's the government's burden to prove that error did not contribute to the findings beyond a reasonable doubt.
So that might be your strongest argument, right, which is like, you know, I have to show that there's error, and it's the government's burden to show that there isn't, that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And the best that they can come up is, well, we'll be assumed that the military judge knew and applied the law, and it's clear from his ruling that he misunderstood at least part of the law.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes,
correct, Your Honor. But, however, here we do believe that we don't simply have to rely on the government not being able to prove its burden. But there is affirmative evidence in this case, which may be different than other cases, where we know the propensity evidence contributed to the findings. And, again, that's the military judge's ruling, saying that the probative value was high. Again, in his ruling, the military judge's own words showed that he found Specialist Hukil had a propensity to commit the charged offenses before the trial even began, thus eroding his presumption of innocence. Knowing this, trial counsel argued impermissible propensity evidence during closing, knowing, again, that the military judge found the probative value of that evidence was, quote, high. For these reasons, the government cannot meet its burden to prove the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and this court should reverse the findings of guilty.
Thank you, counsel. The court will now hear from the government.
Chief Judge Erdman, judges of the court, may it please the court, my name is Major Annie Shea, and I, along with Major Michael Cordy, represent the government in this matter. This court should affirm the findings and sentence in this case because, first, the use of evidence of charged conduct under MRE 413 is not in itself always error, and two, the instructions in Hills are not at issue in this judge alone case, and any error from the evidentiary ruling was harmless.
Okay, so.
Go ahead. It's fine that you say that, okay, but that's not what Hills says. And so your statement in your brief that nothing in the language of the rule requires application of MR 413 to evidence of any other sexual offense simply because it's charged, that's exactly contrary to what we held in Hill. And when you say to the extent that Hill suggests otherwise, this court should limit and clarify that proposition, how about instead if we clarify that we said what we meant and we meant what we said?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government writ large had every opportunity to seek certiorari from the Supreme Court, and they may have tried to convince the Solicitor General of that and may have been told no. I don't really know. What I do know is that they didn't seek cert. And
yes.
So I don't want to go through what we went through at the Air Force where we refused to accept that the opinion says what it says, and then we'll decide this case however we decide it, and then if you don't like that, we'll get petitions for rehearing and then petitions for rehearing on any trailer cases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is perfectly understandable. Part of the problem with Hills, though, is there's some dissonance with that opinion and the plain language of the rule and its application and precedent.
And we've marched through the rule, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
We marched through it, and we marched through it in the context of the overall rule and in the context of the history of the rule and in the context of the constitutional prohibition and absurd notion that you can use one uncharged thing to prove another uncharged thing. So that the more things you put on the charge sheet, the more guilty the person obviously is.
Yes, Your Honor. And so...
Would you agree that that's a little bit unfair?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And the point, though, is...
To say it's okay.
Your Honor, I think that what we're trying to say is that there's a risk of undue prejudice that exists whether or not that evidence is charged or uncharged. I think that's clear. Anytime the government presents proof of bad acts, whether there's more than one, the Supreme Court has recognized that there's a temptation to overpersuade the jury to convict either because...
But that is a totally different thing, right? And we said in Hills as well, like when it's not charged, the concern, the constitutional concern that we have in Hills isn't raised. And then the rule does say what it says, and we've said you can use it as long as you pass the 403 balancing test.
Yes, Your Honor, and what the government is saying is the 403 balancing test is what protects against that risk in both charged and uncharged, and that being because...
You're not understanding that the risk is not what we're concerned about. We're concerned about the fact that you can't use uncharged conduct to prove other uncharged conduct.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is because in this, what you're saying, Your Honor.
So you can't use charged conduct to prove other charged conduct.
Yes, Your Honor, and that perfectly makes sense in Hills, in a case like Hills where you have the exact same offenses from the same victim, same night. For one, there's no probative value as to the propensity from that evidence, and then drawing from that propensity inference, using it as proof for the same charged conduct. The result and the opinion in Hills makes sense in light of those facts.
Okay, but, counsel, you're just going on down the road that Judge Ryan said, please don't go down. Could you address prejudice, please?
Yes, Your Honor. So with prejudice, Your Honor, if this court finds that, first of all, the use of the evidence here, as the military judge allowed in the military ruling, is not in itself constitutional. But if this court finds that's constitutional, then the standard would be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, the problem that the court identified in Hills was with the instructions in that case.
So, Judge Stuckey, no. Right? That's not. I mean, you both are missing it. There was two different things. There was the constitutional error of using evidence of one charged offense to prove the same another charged offense, right, when he's supposed to be presumed innocent of both, right? That was the error. Then there was, why was it a problem in
That's
that
right.
case? Why were we not convinced that it wasn't a problem? We were not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that it wasn't a problem because of why? Because there was a problem? No, because of the instructions.
Yes, Your Honor. And so
the instructions, you say the court found constitutional error with the muddled instructions.
No, yes, Your Honor.
That was not the constitutional error. The constitutional error was the use of the evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. So presuming that the constitutional error was both with the use and the instructions, Your Honor, with the use alone, we have to look at its impact on the case. We have to look at whether or not the error contributed to the result in this trial. And so first of all, we start always with the presumption that because this was a judge alone case, military judges are presumed to know the law absent clear evidence to the contrary. And so what we know is that the military judge understood the law at the time, including the presumption of innocence and proof beyond a reasonable doubt. These are fundamental principles that criminal attorneys and lawyers all understand. And there's just no evidence that the military judges...
Major Shea, what about, or how do you counter the appellant's position that the very findings by the military judge suggest that he allowed himself the benefit of the inference, and that is exactly the prejudice in the case? I think that's what they were saying. I'll let them, if
yes,
they're
Your
coming
Honor.
Back on rebuttal, restate that, but
yes,
I thought I heard them say that.
Yes, Your Honor. And so appellant keeps relying on the statement in the military ruling that says the probative value is high. And the truth is it is high. Anytime you have, this is precisely what Michelson says, when you have the problem is the probative value is so high that it often over-persuades a jury. But in this particular case, we know it's a military judge. What you have to do in a fourth balancing test is you know that there's still the risk of undue prejudice that that we're potentially considering. And so here we're looking at, again, what sort of undue prejudice may have resulted. And so just the finding alone that a probative value is high is not in itself enough to show that there's prejudice in this case.
Do you agree that it's your burden, it's not their burden to show that there's prejudice in this context, it's your burden to tell us beyond a reasonable doubt that there isn't?
Yes,
that
Your
it's
Honor.
It's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes, Your Honor.
What precisely are you relying on?
Well, looking at what the evidentiary ruling did with this, first of all, it didn't allow any admission of new evidence. We know that the same evidence would have been presented with or without this ruling because it was of charged misconduct. The only thing that it allowed was the trial counsel to argue propensity at most. And when you look at the argument in itself, it's very minimal. The trial counsel starts, and this is in JA 127 to 128, that the offenses are strong in their own regard, and then they say later on it's maybe even stronger when considered together. That's all they did. But in Rodriguez, this court found that a TC statement before a military judge alone did not prejudice the accused because military judges are presumed to know the law. They are less swayed when it comes to trial counsel argument.
You'd agree that at least to the extent that this judge, and reasonably so because Hills had not been decided, that this judge thought that it was totally fine to allow evidence of one charged offense to be used to buttress the propensity to have committed the other charged offense, that at least to that extent the military judge got the law wrong.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then you need to say, but there's still, it's still harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because, what's the because?
The because is because that error did not contribute to the result here.
How do we know that?
And it's so circular.
The error did not contribute to the conviction in this case, Your
And
Honor.
How do you show that?
And we're showing that by the error here, we're saying the evidentiary ruling, right? And so the...
Could you say that? I can't hear you. The error what?
The error is in the evidentiary ruling. So the error, presuming the error is in the fact that he drew a propensity inference. Again, there's a two-part inference here. You're drawing the propensity inference from the fact that there are multiple charges, and then from that inference, you're seeing whether or not that inference is either, one, being used to prove the charged conduct, and whether or not it undermines evidence beyond a reasonable doubt of that charged conduct. And so this judge, when you look at his military ruling, when he was, it was given in the context of trying to give an instruction. And he, first of all, he never refers to any of the proponents of an evidence standard that was used in the instructions in Hills. And instead, he states that the court will give an appropriate, tailored, and limited instruction that ensures that the government, it does not relieve the government of its burden of proving every element of every offense charged. and the fact finder may not convict the accused of the charged offenses on the basis of the evidence admitted under MRE 413 alone. And again, these are very fundamental principles.
Wait a minute. Isn't alone an important term there? I mean, it indicates to me that it can't be relied upon solely, but it can be used as propensity evidence, is what he's saying. And after Hills, it can't be.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would point to the California case in Villatoro, where in that case the court said that there was no error in those instructions because they ensured that each of those charges were still proven beyond a reasonable doubt, even those being used to draw a propensity inference. And I would proffer before this court that it's that drawing of the propensity inference from evidence of charged misconduct that is not in itself.
Is that the California case that we talked about in Hills?
Yes, Your Honor. People.
Wasn't the difference in that case that their propensity rule required that the propensity be proven, right, beyond reasonable doubt? I mean, that was the distinction in that case. That's how we distinguished it. And that's the basis upon which they ruled the way that they did. I mean, this case was a while ago, but I remember that pretty clearly.
Yes, Your Honor. The wording of the instructions in that case was essentially that each of those charges needed to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, even those from which a propensity inference was drawn.
Major, earlier in your argument, you seem to be seeking to distinguish a fact pattern where you have two offenses being committed with one victim as compared to a case where you have two different victims.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the distinction, meaningful distinction, you're trying to draw there?
Well, the distinction comes in how 413 is applied. When you have two different offenses or multiple offenses that are factually distinct, it actually gives an actually probative propensity inference. When you have something like Hills, where you have the same victim, same night, there's really almost no probative value to drawing a propensity inference. You can't really say that the accused had a tendency because he committed, you know, the same as sexual assault against
where
the
victim. Where does Hills indicate it's limited to the first fact pattern?
Well, there's language in the beginning of the Hills that talks about how MRE 413 cannot be used as a mechanism for admitting evidence of charged misconduct to show propensity to commit the very charged misconduct. There's also, when this court looked at the legislative history.
It's limited to charged conduct. You can't use charged conduct to prove other charged conduct.
Yes, Your Honor. And so, again, this is reading that statement in the context of Hills. And this court had also stated that, you know, MRE 413 was never intended to bolster the credibility of the named victim through inferences drawn from the same allegations of the named victim. And that makes sense, absolutely, in Hills. Because, again, there's no probative value. And then, to speak of the...
Here, there's two named victims, right? And you want to use the evidence of both of their named victims to prove the other named victim.
Yes, Your Honor. And
innocent of both charges.
Right, Your Honor. And so the difference...
So it's doing the same thing.
Yes, Your Honor. There's two different parts to it. So the first part, again, is a probative value, and then we have to look at what you're looking at here, the prejudice.
Because you want it all to be a 403 test, right?
Your Honor, the government's position is that a 403 test would bar the improper use, the unconstitutional application of this rule.
403 isn't a constitutional rule.
No, Your Honor, but 403 has been the test that this court and many courts have relied on to ensure the constitutional application of MRE 413. What this court did in Hills to say that we can't even get to 413 when it's evidence of charged misconduct, saying because in that case it is barred both statutorily and constitutionally. But when you look at the analysis for how that happens, Your Honor, first there is a difference between the probative value that is drawn from when the charges are factually distinct, but second, when it comes to that bootstrapping effect that the court referred to that may erode the presumption of innocence, that risk...
I think it's equally bootstrappy whether you got one or two.
Well, there...
I mean, how is it not?
Yes, Your Honor, but the thing is, even if there's an increased risk of that undue prejudice, which is court defined as the erosion of presumption of innocence, which is it's tempting the jury to convict based off of propensity alone, that again has always been protected by the 403 balancing test. It's protected with the application of 413 to uncharged misconduct.
So the 403 test is kind of magic powder that makes it all go, that makes Hills go away? I'm not understanding where you're going.
Your Honor, the 403 balancing test was a framework that has always existed and ensured that MRA 413 is constitutional. Even though MRA 413 itself allows for a propensity inference to be drawn from evidence of any other sexual offense. And this is, again, Congress's rule, at least in the federal rule, that countered a very historical ban against propensity inference. And the reason why there's always been a ban against the propensity inference is because it potentially erodes the presumption of innocence, because it invites a jury to actually convict based off of prior bad acts or propensity alone. And again and again, this court, the Supreme Court, other courts have stated that the 403 balancing test and the right analysis and all these safeguards that are built into a rule are what keep it constitutional. Because again, you put before the fact finder two different things: the probative value of that propensity inference, which we recognize is very highly probative, but also highly prejudicial in some cases. And it becomes more and more prejudicial when you have a case like Hills, and you have, again, very low probative value, but also this very high bootstrapping effect. You're using essentially the same sort of offenses that are interrelated to prove these same offenses. When you
looked at Wright, you looked at 403 and constitutionality in Wright, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
One of the things that we said is that it would be fundamentally unfair, i.e. unconstitutional, if it undermines the presumption of innocence and the requirement that prosecution prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, right? And then we went on to say, well, in this particular case, that wasn't a problem because it was not charged conduct, it was uncharged conduct, and because the military judge would use his gatekeeping rule under 403.
Yes, right? Your Honor.
In Hills, we said, no, this is exactly the case that Wright wasn't. Right, this is fundamentally unfair. That was the constitutional problem.
Yes, Your Honor. And
so 403, we didn't think at all that 403 helped that constitutional problem.
Your Honor,
I mean, I understand your argument. I mean, I read your brief, and you think Hills is wrong, and that's fine. Okay, but we don't think Hills is wrong. So unless you have something new,
well, Your Honor, the only reason I would say this, and again, you're right, the court considered all these considerations before Hills, in Hills. However, the strongest thing is just the plain language of the rule when it says that Congress, when in writing a rule, said that it's evidence that the accused committed any other sexual offense. And when we draw a bright line between even between charged and uncharged misconduct before it even gets to MRE 413, what happens is it leads to anomalous results. So if this case, for example, gets set aside on appeal and one charge is dismissed with prejudice and the other one goes to rehearing, in that case, the government could present the exact same case as it did in the beginning, and it would be permissible to draw a propensity inference at that point.
It's anomalous, but that doesn't implicate the thing that we were concerned about. You see what I'm saying? It's like you say it's anomalous, and I suppose in some ways everything is anomalous when it comes to this rule, right? But the thing we were concerned about, a very specific thing in Hills, which was the same, that the conduct at issue in that trial was being used to make it more likely that he was guilty of the conduct in the same trial because they proved it by preponderance of the evidence, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that, what you are calling anomalous is just a very different situation because it's not implicating the same concern.
Yes, Your Honor. And what the government would say was that when it comes to charged misconduct, if this court recognizes in Hills that there's a heightened risk of prejudice, that risk of prejudice is sufficiently protected by when the fact finder or the judge serves as a gatekeeper and actually uses the 403 test to ensure that the proper inferences and the proper instructions are used to ensure that we don't undermine the presumption of innocence. Your Honor, going back to harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt in this case, I think it's also important to look at the evidence in this case. And once you look at the evidence, you see that you have strong independent testimony of both victims, which is corroborated by others as well as admissions of the accused, this court can be confident that this error in this judge alone case was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
First, Judge Sparks, you have accurately articulated the defense's position. And here there is no reason to believe, let alone reason beyond a reasonable doubt, that the military judge wouldn't himself have followed the same procedures that he said he would have instructed the panel in his ruling, the same procedures that this court found erroneous in Hills. In fact, under RCM 801, Echo 1, the military judge is presumed to know and follow his own rulings. And to sum up, essentially here, the military judge eroded appellant's presumption of innocence by finding he had a propensity for committing the charged offenses before they had been proven beyond a reasonable doubt in violation of Hills. And the government cannot meet its burden to prove the erroneous application of propensity evidence in this case was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Pending any further questions from the court.
Captain DePaul, I do have one question, just out of curiosity. You've mentioned a couple of times about the military judge's finding when he was conducting his 403 analysis. Now, does the judge really have to give himself a 403 instruction to begin with? I mean, why does the judge have to tell everybody that he's not going to misuse the evidence? Isn't that what 403 instruction is all about? Isn't the rule designed to tell the members that they should not misuse certain evidence?
Your Honor, in this case, though, the military judge's ruling in black and white tells us that he is going to follow the same procedures that this court found erroneous in Hills.
All right, well, let me ask you this. What if the judge had not made that particular statement in his findings? What if he had simply gone through 401, 402, and then made his ruling? Would you be making the same argument?
In which statement are you referring to, Your Honor?
In his rulings, I think it's number 4, his finding, he talks about 403 and runs through the 403 analysis. And I'm asking you whether or not that's essentially required in Judge Lone case to begin with. And if he had not made that particular ruling, would you be making the same argument? And the only reason why I ask is because you've focused on part of that ruling where the judge says the probative weight of the evidence is high. That's what he says in that part of his ruling. So my question is, had he not said that, would you still be making the same argument you're making now?
Perhaps, Your Honor, in a judge alone case, if the military judge had not made a written ruling as detailed as it was in this case, the defense might not have as strong an argument that there was constitutional error. But here, where the military judge says in black and white in a 6-page ruling that he's going to instruct the panel in the exact same procedures that this court followed in Rodinus and Hills, and there's no reason to believe that when he became the fact finder that he would follow those exact same procedures, it does make our case stronger.
What if the military judge said, all right, I'm going to admit this under 413 or under 414, but I know, right, I know that no matter, despite the fact that it's being considered as propensity evidence, I know that each offense has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt based on evidence.
Your Honor, well, first in Hills.
And I understand you didn't say that, right, but it's a military judge alone trial, and the military judge says, you know, I think it's okay to use this for propensity purposes, but unlike the confusing instructions that were given to the members in Hills, I would instruct myself, right, that if I had to instruct myself, I would instruct myself that every element of every offense has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
First, Your Honor, that very scenario would present error. Hills clearly states that charge misconduct cannot be used to prove
I understand it would be error. I'm asking, what if he then went on to say, but while I'm admitting it as propensity evidence and I'm considering it as propensity evidence, at the end of the day, I know each offense has to be proven, every element, beyond reasonable doubt.
Your Honor, I still believe there's error because part of the error is the application
of... No, I know that there's error, right? There's error because he did something that he shouldn't have done. I'm asking of him acknowledging, nonetheless, that this other part of the law has to be what dictates the outcome.
Your Honor...
Would that cure the problem?
Your Honor, to be clear, an instruction like that that the judge were to give himself would not cure the problem in Hills. One of the problems in Hills was specifically the finding by a preponderance of the evidence that accused has a propensity to commit the charged offenses before they've been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's that finding by a preponderance before it's been proven beyond a reasonable doubt is a problem that even if the judge gave the instruction, Judge Ryan, that you mentioned, that would not cure that problem. And I see I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Maybe briefly summarize.
Yes, Your Honor, for the reasons previously stated, the government cannot meet its burden to prove that the erroneous application of propensity evidence in this case is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 10:25.